Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Review Yourself. Right. Strap yourselves in. Get the popcorn ready. Get a beverage of your choice. Because we've got some guests that will eat your hat, your shark fin hat. We have Stu, the envy of podcast planners everywhere. He has at least 3 years of podcasts completed at any one time. It's Stu from Stu World Order. Welcome, Stu.
Thank you so much for having me back on, Sean.
Pleasure. And not to be outdone, we also have Kevin and Erin from the podcast That Wouldn't Die. Always makes me think of Michael Myers. I don't know if it's because I've done a lot of Halloween, but it's, every time I hear the title, I'm like, God, that's a good title.
It is.
We keep resurrecting.
Evil does not die tonight, by the way.
Love lives tomorrow. Those films. So, welcome, everybody. If anyone hasn't figured out by now, we are reviewing Deep Blue Sea, the 1999 classic. It's Stu's first ever watch, so I can't wait to see his reaction on this. I mean, I love Stu's reaction to everything, but this, we'll get into it. And also stick around, because I genuinely think I may have a point of view that is more controversial than my Batman and Robin. In terms of films, it's not anything political. No, don't worry about it. You won't, cringe, but I can't wait to see Stu's face. You won't be able to see it because you listen to this, but stick around.
I want you to make it political. Reference Trump and the decline of American society and as it, twists around Deep Blue Sea, LL Cool J, is Donald Trump. I don't know, whatever you want to do.
There's one thing I could say. Just lighten up, America. Just have a word with yourself and just lighten up a bit. Just put a barbecue on. Give some beers out. You'll be fine.
Erin reminded me of something. Are there any other LL Cool J movies that the four of us could do? Because we've now done H2O. We're about to do Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah. Yes, there is. Sorry, there is. I've got trivia on that. Hang on a minute. There, he did. So in this film, we're jumping way ahead. So LL Cool J plays the cook in this. Basically, he's a preacher. Basically, he jokes all the way through this about brothers never make out of these situations alive, not ever. But he actually made three horror films in the 90s. Well, 90s into the early 2000s, where he made it out alive. One was Halloween H2O, 20 years later. The other one was Deep Blue Sea. And the third one, which I've never seen, I don't think I've heard of, maybe you guys have, was a film called Mindhunters, 2004. It wasn't that's the year it came out.
No,
and he survives all three of them.
Series Mindhunters, but I don't know of a movie.
Yes, very good series.
Yeah,
very good.
All right, well, the next time the four of us reconvene, it's for Mindhunters.
Yes, that should be good.
I always thought LL was underused. I mean, he's quite the character in this.
He's very much on his own for a good hour of the film.
LL Cool J is in his own movie.
Yeah, it is. It's really, he's not associated with whatever the hell else is going on. This is a separate movie. They're this movie's too boring. Let's have this whole other side thing of LL Cool J just wandering around with a parrot. It's like Turner and Hooch, but with a parrot.
Maybe they were doing test screenings before they shot it, and they were like, no one's living up to this LL Cool J guy. Let's just get rid of all the other cast. Let's just have him on his own in these waterlogged corridors, moaning about this, that, and the other.
That's exactly what happened.
It's a very English way of putting it, but that's exactly what happened. He just wades around trying not to get eaten.
Talking to himself and his parent.
Yeah, exactly. And God occasionally.
And God. Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
so this film is directed by Rennie Harlin. Now, he's done quite a few kind of action films, so you kind of know what you're getting. I actually have just watched the making of, because I wasn't going to bring this up because I didn't want to look like an idiot, but I might as well because it's good trivia. I've turned up early to some podcasts before. An hour, a week was my late. I turned up a month early for this review. So, I've had these notes for a while. So I watched the making of just before we came on, and Rennie Harlin said that basically, it was no more hiding sharks. And their kind of mantra for the film was, you can swim, but you can't hide. That they were going to have this big scale horror film. And I mean, I was pretty impressed looking back. I mean, let's just hit it right now. There's some CGI here that has aged like milk. It is, yeah. Oh dear God, it's awful.
It's rough.
The Scott character's death in particular is just terrible. That's the one note I definitely had, was like, oh God, that looked abysmal.
Really? Not Samuel L. Jackson's? Really? Not that one? That one's...
That one was better than whenever Scott died. Scott died, it was CGI, but it looked like a rubber doll. Like, if you're doing CGI, how do you still make it look like a fake doll that the shark has? Well,
you need to learn the lesson from Jaws. Less is more.
Who's Scott?
Well,
wasn't the guy named Scott with the goatee? Yeah, the one who's like, if you're going to trust anybody, trust me. That guy?
Tom Michael Scott. Scott's.
Scoggs. Oh, I thought his name was Scott.
It does sound like Scott. Yeah, Michael Rappaport, whatever. So they built a lot of animatronic sharks for this. So they got Walt Conti, who did Free Willy, one of my favorite films from a kid.
Never saw it. It looked ridiculous. Oh,
right, that means something else. And Anaconda. Obviously didn't. And they were basically, I think that Deep Blue Sea's entered kind of pop culture, because I think, ask anybody about shark films, and Jaws is number one. There's no getting away from it.
Absolutely.
You can't do a shark film and not talk about Jaws, you know, at least a little bit. And then I think most people would get Deep Blue Sea, to be honest, because I think there's been a lot of, like, trashy shark films, like, even more so lately with, you know, Shark Octopus and all these stupid ones. You know, Shark Night was a decent one. That was from, I think, the guys who made Final Destination.
I did enjoy that.
That was a good one. Yeah. That might be one worth watching, actually, if we make it a trifecta of.
Because what is it? They put a bunch of sharks in the bayou, random sharks from all over
the world.
It's like
a lake or something. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah, a lake full of sharks.
Like, yeah, a freshwater lake with, like, loads of salt water sharks. But don't worry about it. Don't think too much about the sharks.
Yeah.
It's entertaining, though, so I would like to... I've got a DVD somewhere, because I went through a real shark phase at one point. So the film starts off, it's that classic, you know, teenager-esque start. I mean, I don't think they're teenagers, but they're acting like them. They're on a boat, they've got, like, the old boombox going there, which most people today won't know what it is. The wine goes in the water, as it does, looks like blood, it's red wine. Wouldn't have been as good as
red wine.
Does
that attract sharks? Does red wine attract sharks?
Fine Cabernet.
Yeah. Maybe they're like out of Halloween, instead of pounding Chardonnays. But now maybe they just like a bit of wine, you never know. I can imagine it's quite strong, but I mean, I don't know. Grapes. Do sharks like grapes? I don't know.
A lot of grapes under the sea.
I don't think they have a lot of opportunities, yeah.
Under the sea.
Yeah. I mean, answers on a postcard, please, if anybody knows that. The lads there are basically just trying to get their end away. That's all they're there for.
Well, what did they say? The shark bumps the catamaran, and the girl's like, did you feel that? And he's like, I'm about to, baby, or something along those lines.
He's just annoyed because he's the one who wanted to, you know, rock the boat, but it turns out to be a shark. There you go. Oh, yeah, that was the other thing. And then a wine goes in the water, and a real cliche. I don't know who's brought it with them, because it's clearly like a boating and chill type situation for the 90s. Who's brought a teddy bear with them, and why does it sink like it's made out of lead? Like,
I thought about that too.
teddy bears have no buoyancy.
Is that got some kind of an illicit substance cut into it? Like, what's in that bear?
Cocaine bear. It's cocaine bear.
Cocaine bear.
Yeah, well, and then, like, the catamaran gets hit, they all end up in the water. The last gets out just as about a bite on the ass, or ass for the Americans. And then this mysterious bloke just shows up and captures it. And it's Thomas Jane, who we know from The Mist. He's been in all sorts, but I can't think of any. He's one of those actors that's kind of in everything. He's kind of in everything, but has he done anything noteworthy? Like, no offense, Thomas Jane. Do you know what I mean? He's
no,
like in a
no lot. Offense, but you're not noteworthy, Tom Jane.
Yeah. No, it's not that he's not noteworthy. Like, The Mist's amazing. Don't get me wrong. I just mean he's one of these actors that's in a lot. But when you say, right, well, what's his, like, top three films to watch? I'm like, The Mist's amazing.
He's not tearing up the screen, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's got a. I mean, maybe his agent. I'm putting the boot into his agent now. Maybe his agent, you know, hasn't. Maybe he's got Henry Cavill's agent, because he's certainly not picking the best of either.
I read somewhere that they wanted him to play Rick Grimes in The Walking Dead, and he turned it down. They went with Anthony.
Really?
There's some people who just make bad choices with their career.
That makes sense. That makes sense because Frank Darabont, director of Shawshank Green Mile, he did, and also The Mist, he does a lot of Stephen King. He did the first few, was it first few episodes?
First season. And there's, there's a lot of people from The Mist are in Walking Dead, so that would make sense,
His busy
schedule wouldn't allow for that, or what?
He's too busy tearing it up, Aaron. Like, give the guy a chance.
Give him a chance, Aaron. Come on.
I am an actor, not a TV star.
He's probably off doing Hamlet somewhere with Sir Patrick Stewart. I don't know what he was doing.
Yeah, dinner theater.
And also, so then we get, you know, American. If there's one thing that, like, even when they're trying to be serious, it always comes across as a bit of a joke. Even when it's the 90s, it's like US news. I mean, like, British news is like, sounds really pleasant when it's something really horrible, like 100 people have been killed in flash flooding, and it sounds really lovely.
It's all very
awful.
Calm and steady.
Yeah, it's very much like the captain of, you know, the pilot of the aircraft type thing. Don't worry, we're going down towards the ground. Our engines are flaming, and we have got a few minutes to live. But don't worry, there's some Chardonnay left. It's type thing. This one's like USA Today. Everybody, a test shark has escaped, but it's been recaptured, and you're like, it attacked a catamaran, and you're like,
front page.
What? Like,
front page.
Yeah, exactly. USA Today.
No, they were doing
really?
Construction in LA on the freeways, and it was Carmageddon 2000 whatever. Be prepared.
That is true.
Carmageddon. Was that real?
That was real.
Wow. Okay. I mean,
traffic.
Everything is a Mageddon. Everything, because whenever it snows like 6 inches, it's snow Mageddon. Everything is a Mageddon in America.
Our hair's on fire because California's in a drought. And then it rains an inch, and it was like, flash flooding! Oh, my God! We're all going to get swept away! What you should know to save your family.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what I do like about American news. This is a big tangent, but stick with us. It's like, why did he always have that poor bastard, like, stood in the middle of a street in a blowing gale? He's soaked. He's wet through. He's like, hi, Masha. I'm stood here on 61st Street, and oh my God, the rain is just lashing down. And you're like, why have you got some poor guy stood out in the like in the rain? I get him like undercover somewhere. This isn't very safe,
right?
Like, I thought
it's like nobody in America will believe that you're having a hurricane unless you stick a guy in the middle of it. otherwise, we're like. I don't believe this is actually a thing. I'm going to go down to Florida right now.
Fake news.
I was going to say, Stuart, Americans not believing news? I mean, that's a bit too far. I mean,
America,
we're going too far down
anymore.
The fantasy line here.
No. We've all gone straight to hell.
Always makes me think of that scene from The Day After Tomorrow where that bard just comes and wipes the guy out. He's like stood there like, this is absolutely terrifying. And there's all the tornadoes. And then that bard just is like... He's just gone. By the way, I've been, you know, politely putting the boot into America. I'll now put the boot into England. Right. Well, I genuinely didn't know that Saffron Burrows was actually English. I thought she was like American or Canadian or some other nationality doing this cod English accent. I don't know where she's from, but no one talks like that.
Take that, Saffron Burrows.
Like, you know, very bitchy today. It's a very, like, noble cause, doing out, like, trying to defeat Alzheimer's. It's awful. You know, it's an awful condition. But it's just the way she talks. It's like, I need to cure Alzheimer's. Like, no one talks like this. Like, English people don't talk like this.
Is it her regular accent?
Yeah.
Put one on? That's how she talks, interviews?
I mean, a little bit, but, I mean, I don't know where she's from. But she is actually English, and that's how she talks. But I thought it's that exaggerated. I thought it was fake, and it's not. So apologies, Saffron.
Well, but maybe she kind of tries to make it sound a little posher or something along those lines. Like, I've read somewhere that Roger Moore's accent was originally like Michael Caine's.
Yeah.
And he actively tried to kind of develop this kind of upper-class, posh-y accent.
I did read that also.
Yeah,
Saffron Burrows was My Fair Lady-ing herself.
Yes.
Possibly. Yeah. Good shout. Yeah. Well, to be fair, like when you watch BBC News, that's not a real accent either. Like, nobody talks like that. When you start working for the BBC, like, they've got the odd regional accent now, like myself, but very few and far between. But very much when you do the news, you are expected to talk in that very kind of clipped Queen's English manner or King's English manner. And nobody really talks like that in a way. Like, even
neutral.
Yeah, it's just not. I mean, some people, but a very small amount of people. Which always makes me laugh when I'm watching Masters of the Air right now and all the English people in it talk like that. And it's like, where's the people from, like, you know, that sound like Luke from Nerdstalgic, who's from, like, the Birmingham Black Country area? Where's the people that sound like me from the Northeast? Where's the Scots? Where's the Scottish? Where's the Welsh? Where's the Irish? Where's like, the different, you know, where's the Michael Caines?
Exactly. I was watching Game of Thrones. And what happened is they all had to emulate Sean Bean's accent.
Yeah.
Like the entire cast.
And they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it.
It's a tough one. It's a tough
one. It starts falling apart quickly till Tyrion just gave up and just started speaking English, American English.
American.
Well, it's South Yorkshire, so Sheffield, it's a tough one. Because I'm from, like, North Yorkshire, which is a big, massive area. I don't sound anything like that because I'm from Wales, but it's a very difficult one to do. Do it for Yorkshire. It's hard to do. It's really difficult to do. So don't ask certain people to do it because it's just not going to happen. But yeah, it's just such a strange one. But yeah, I mean, he was so good in that show.
We were talking about The Prestige yesterday, and I have to say Christian Bale's accent in that was so irritating.
Don't.
I was like, what the hell? Isn't he from the United Kingdom? Where did that shit
come from? He is, but
even on EastEnders, like, they don't talk like that. Where is he supposed to be from?
The Dark Knight interviews, he slips between, like, English and American. And
say
what you want. You can either love the American accent, and there's lots of them, and there's lots of English, but let's generalize for a minute. You can either love or hate the American accent, and you can love or hate the English accent, but I'll tell you what. What no one hates more from every arena is somebody who slips into both. Like, nobody wants that. Nobody wants a guy who's like, oh, well, yeah, when we were making this movie, we started eating some toast and butter. Like, nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. It just offends everybody. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it's a very kind of an odd thing to do.
Like, Cary Grant would, like, make up his own crazy transatlantic accent. You know what I mean? Where it's like, you know, it's a brand new hybrid I'm creating. Enjoy.
people do. It's like John Barman from Doctor Who and Torchwood.
He's
not bullied for Scottish, so he does a kind of very transatlantic accent. But now it's very much the one person that I'll dip into Marvel and I'll be positive. So this is a first. The one I've seen do it the best is probably Tom Holland. He can go between the two seamlessly.
Good.
Like, I mean, I don't know how he sounds to you, like, to Americans, but to us, he sounds pretty much perfect, to be fair, but I wouldn't know.
Idris Elba. Nobody knew he was British.
Well, Idris Hugh Elba. Laurie, House, as well.
Yeah. I had to tell people, because I was used to him from, you know, his comedy stuff, and then I was like, is this the same guy?
Daniel Kaluuya as well. He does a decent.
Oh, yeah. The first time I heard him speak for real, I was like, wait, no, what? No.
Yeah, he's from London. Yeah, I mean, I remember because when Get Out came out, I don't know if it was in your news, but over here, people were like, apparently Americans are like, goddamn Brits coming over here, stealing all our movie jobs.
Yes! Absolutely. Yeah. Don't listen to Andrew Lincoln on Walking Dead, by the way. Coral. Coral. Like, Coral. Who's Coral? Coral's not a name. Anyway.
Yeah. Just talk normally. Yeah.
Walking Dead had a Carol, a Carl, a Dale, and a Daryl. It was like, it had one and a half names for four characters.
That's true. God, they were struggling for vowels or something constantly. What was going on? Did the guy literally just kind of have a few letters and thought, right, I need to make names out of this? Like a bet or something.
Yeah,
he pulled six letters out of a Scrabble bag.
He had to then come up with some unique names.
Yeah, he got a Scrabble set from a charity shop or thrift shop, as you guys would say, and there was like six letters, and he thought, well, I've got no dictionary, so this will have to be it.
Six letters, I'm naming four characters, baby.
If you don't know who they are, well, never mind. Yeah. So Deep Blue Sea. Well, yeah. So that basically he saves people. Then we meet Samuel L. Jackson, who plays like the richest guy in the world. The names aren't very important. Don't let it worry you. He's been in this thing in the Himalayas. We gather he's been in some kind of disaster where he's been one of the few people to make it out. And the guy's like, oh, you saved all those people. And he's like, well, not all. He's very ominous. He's very Samuel Jackson. In the best possible way.
I think
way.
He
that
was underused.
Criticism. Oh,
underused,
yeah, definitely.
Samuel L. Jackson. Just a waste.
Well,
throw a couple MFs in there, you know. Just casual MF.
Yeah.
Please.
I am sick of these,
motherfucking sharks.
Yeah.
in this motherfucking Alcatraz floats, or whatever he calls it.
He was way too chill. It was like...
Yeah. I really laughed, though, when he said about the... He said that... He's like, where's Tattoo? Like, for the plane.
Oh, yeah.
The girl's like, what? And he's like, I am getting old. And I was like, oh, we've all been there. We've all been there. I have an example. I was telling someone I worked with, it was about 21 at the time. I was like 8 years older. And I remember telling them about, they were like moaning about Bluetooth being unreliable. And I was like, Bluetooth being unreliable? I said, you weren't around for infrared? And he was like, what's that? I said, oh, well, when you wanted to send like a polyphonic ringtone to your friend, you used to hold both your phones end to end until it sent. And he was like, that's not real. Yes, it is. I was like, no, you're making it up. I'm like, no, I'm not making it up. Yeah, it's just like, we used to have to wait week to week. We used to have to wait like a year for a video to come out. Like, God. The license plate from Jaws turns up, gets pulled out of the shark's teeth. And you get the whole spiel you get in all these films, like, don't worry, kid. Sharks don't like the taste of us, but they're going to be eating us for the next hour and a half. Stick around.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Every shark
burning calories to eat us for the next 2 hours.
Yeah.
So, like, a little bit.
Yeah. Like, oh, they think you're a nice juicy seal, but they might eat you a few times. We find out that these Mako sharks, these three massive test sharks, they've made them bigger. We meet Dr. Jim Willock, played by the ever incredible Stellan Skarsgård. He plays the Jim Whitlock, the doctor. And when we first meet him, this isn't a joke. He's literally pissing in the wind. Like,
yeah.
Just stood there drunkenly pissing. I don't know why.
No, there's no characterization reason for that to be happening.
Nope.
He just is.
Toys.
I think Stellan Skarsgård was actually just doing that, and they just filmed him, and they were like,
turn the camera.
Yeah. It's like, I found my muse.
I love a good Skarsgård. I don't care which one, just throw a Skarsgård in the mix.
Oh, Chernobyl, if anyone hasn't seen it. Oh, unbelievable. He's great in that. Tom Skoggs, played by Michael Rapaport. It does sound like Scott, though. I'll give it that, because I was writing Scott in my notes, so I'm with you on that. It just, like I said, it's one of these films, you can enjoy it, and you're like, oh, Samuel L. Jackson did this, and... Like, I don't even know what his name is. Like, no one cares. Just enjoy the film. It's one of those films.
Yeah, all my notes, Sam Jackson, Tom Jane, LL Cool J. I didn't know anybody's name. And the one guy whose name I thought I knew was Scott, and I was wrong. Yeah.
I wrote down Janice from The Sopranos. I don't know what her name is here.
I just had Science Lady.
She is. She's called Janinus, I think. Anyway.
It's the radio operator who gets immolated in the tower.
Oh, she gets slammed, doesn't she? It's like, would you like a helicopter at the face to die? Yes, I would. If you're going to go out swinging, Oh, I know that. I love when people do that. Like, I don't think your hands are going to stop a helicopter.
They're never going to send a helicopter in a hurricane. They'd be like, sorry, dudes, you're all scientists. Figure that out.
Right.
That was never going to happen.
Just get a tourniquet on it.
Do something. I mean, just stare at him. You all have a science background.
Yeah. and then you get this good interaction between Samuel L. Jackson's character, this rich CEO who's funding this base to do research. We're not quite sure what yet. It's this old World War II submarine pen. I love U-571 as a film. It's terrible history. It's a horrific history, but it's good fun. You get this really good interaction because Thomas Jane plays this ex-con. Who's amazing with sharks. He's like the shark whisperer, but Carter Blake, Carter, yeah, that's the one. And he basically says, oh, I guess you are the first rich guy in history who's squeaky clean. So watch out, you don't trip over the social commentary on that one. That's all you get, really.
It's important that that you offend the person who's funding your actual job in every one of these fucking movies. It's like, hey, fuck you, I'm going to ignore you and just say mean things to you.
Yeah, don't do that in your real life jobs. Like, you know,
do not.
The head of your company walks in, you're like, here he is, you're this fucking useless.
This was 1999. This was the era of Steve Austin. Everybody was F-U-ing their boss.
Well, I mean, there was no backstory as to why Thomas Jane was able to basically do some kind of acrobatics in the water to avoid getting eaten all the time. Right? Well, he didn't work at SeaWorld or anything.
Do you know that bit was real? That was, he actually swam with sharks, like, in a pair of trunks in the sea.
So yeah, that take that, people who besmirched the good name of Thomas Jane. See you swim with sharks.
Oh, yeah, he's like,
like down in Belize, where you pet the nurse sharks? Is that what we're talking about?
Oh, the CGI in the feeding scene, I thought, had really aged badly. Because there's actually a quote in this, and it kind of makes you think you should be careful of a gauntlet you throw down for people, because things change with time. Like, in the making of this, I'm not joking. Right? Renny Harlan says, I challenge anyone to pick where the CGI next, where the animatronics end and the CGI starts. And I was like, oh, Renny. Like, no, Renny. Like, they did some amazing animatronics in this, don't get me wrong, but come on. Like, even for now. And they're like, oh, this is, it's the same kind of stuff we use in Jurassic Park, and you build a 3D model. And I was like,
Jurassic Park.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, no.
Well, it's like the original Superman's tagline was, you will believe a man can fly. And let me tell you, we did not.
Well, have you seen how they made him run, though? They, like, attached him on, like, a little crane, and they had him, like, and they drove a truck, and he's, like, just, like, kicking his legs above the ground, and they make it look like he's
going to like a stooge.
Yes. How it's been, that footage is amazing, like, the like, making of. Like,
you won't believe a man can run.
Yeah, you won't believe Samuel Jackson got eaten by a shark. And apparently, right, I don't know whether this is true, because I know IMDb gets kind of updated. I don't know how it gets updated, but I read somewhere that LL Cool J voices the parrot. Now, I'm not being funny, but I think that might have been a joke. But if it's not, that's hilarious. I'm not sure.
People are saying it's true, so
I definitely thought the bird's voice was a woman.
Maybe he's a voiceover genius.
Don't know. It did sound like a parrot. We used to have a parrot, and it sounded quite parrot, so you never know. We meet Saffron Burrows as the professor. She definitely, I don't know if this will translate, but whenever she interacts with Carter, she like kind of threatens his job, basically. Like, do what I say, he hasn't revealed his background fully, I don't think. And she knows. So, and she's very clever in getting people around her that kind of, or at least him, that they've got something to lose, so they're not going to like rock the boat too much, no pun intended, or catamaran should it be. And she definitely fancies a bit of rough. Like, she looks at him and she's like, you can tell there's lust in those eyes. There's science in the brain, but there's lust in those eyes.
Yeah, what is she going to do? Is he on work release from prison to go to the Aquatica and train sharks? Does he get out, like, for the weekend?
I don't know. It's like all the other inmates are going swimming. Carter, you're off to Alcatraz on water. Yeah.
Well, she's like saying he knows stuff. Like, he knows they're kind of breaking the rules. Like, how the hell would he know? He's not a scientist.
Because that's what she's whispering in his ear late at night.
Whispering sweet nothings.
Oh, maybe so.
You should see the size of the shark's brain, baby.
She's there just so like, big. Yeah, she's there like, he's there in bed like, tell me how many Geneva Conventions you've broken. She's like, I've broken 3. She's like, tell me more. I don't know what they're talking about.
That's their pillow talk.
But Samuel L. Jackson calls it straight away, because he says, like, I'm amazed we've come so far so quick without genetic tampering. And I'm like, me, I'll answer that question. You haven't. Like, you've had a shark escape, attack a catamaran, like a fully sized, like, which sharks don't do. They don't attack boats, like massive boats like that. Orcas do, but we're not quite sure why they're doing that at the minute. And they're now hunting in packs like wild dogs. I don't know. Why do they always choose wild dogs? Like, I'm pretty sure there's a lot more other animals that hunt in packs.
Lions.
Humans hunt in packs. Lions. Yes. Humans. Tigers. Well, yeah, that sounds like I was...
Lions, tigers, and bears, oh my.
They hunt in packs like wild hillbillies.
Diddling ding ding. They're hunting in... So Carter tries to warn her, you know, that the guy out there feeding the sharks and making sure they're staying is, like, lecturing the scientist. Although he turns out to be the more intelligent one, but we'll get there. He tries to warn her, and she's like, look, we're all out of work if this goes wrong. And apparently, Safran Burrows was to be the hero of the film, but Rennie Harlin said in an interview that test audience hated the ending where she survived, which apparently really, really surprised him. But from the guy who thought the animatronic CGI was seamless, even for 1999, you know.
No, I thought she was gonna survive because she makes it all the way to the end. So I was getting very mad. I was like, no, she broke the shark Geneva convention. You have to kill her.
Yeah, she must die for her sins.
She's a mad scientist.
Yeah.
I do think they missed an opportunity. They should have had, like, you know, like, do you remember those really old fashioned, like, the silent films where it would get to the end and it would just say Finn for finished, but I thought that's a really bad joke, isn't it? But the test audience is funny you mentioned, Stu, because apparently the test audiences felt she should die given everything was her fault. Like, you know, there's even that bit when Janice, the other woman who survives until she gets eaten, who's going out with the scientist, she's like, you stupid bitch. Like, and I was like, I'm glad someone said it, because, like, everyone stood around, like, people are dying because of you.
Like, I mean, she was cool to get paid, and she was cool to work there until it wasn't cool. Now I've removed all guilt and responsibility for everything I did.
She was in the lab with Saffron Burrows and Stellan Skarsgård. So
and she's buffing the professor.
Absolutely.
Oh, yeah, clearly, yeah.
But they were, like, making out, and, oh, he's a genius, let me tell you. In the sack, I mean. So, so it's like she knows. It's not like Thomas Jane. He's like, I just jump into the shark pit every now and again. I don't know what you're doing in there.
But it's funny you mentioned she makes it right to the end, Stu, because they made some quick edits and reshot some footage to make her get eaten by a shark. And then they also, just to compound it, because, oh, let's make her a real villain. Apparently, and I've not seen them, so I don't know if they've ever been released or I haven't looked hard enough. They then cut out some earlier scenes with her character, which made her, like, to make her less sympathetic. So they made her, like, more of an out-and-out villain, which I thought was interesting. But apparently it was Rennie Harlin's idea to make LL Cool J the hero, the lone hero. I'm joking. The hero. Citing that everybody liked him and that he was a pretty cool guy. And audiences apparently loved the, like, revised ending. So there you go.
Right. Well, he kills two of the sharks himself. Two of the three. LL does it.
So, are you a hero by just not getting killed? Now that makes you a hero?
He's a hero because he gives up alcoholism to kill sharks.
That's true.
Yes.
He throws aside the bottle and he becomes a hero of shark killing.
Saffron Burrows just commits suicide. So that was nice of her. She's like, I'm just going to jump into the pit for no reason.
Yeah. Well, she does. She cuts her hand, doesn't she? And she's just like, I'm off. This will distract it.
It's the smartest animal on the planet, but it's still an animal.
Yeah. She's like, it wants me. Like, as if, like, it knows she's, like, it's like there, this little pen looking around at everybody with his beady little eyes thinking, yeah, she's the one.
I
don't understand if these sharks are so smart, and one already escaped by jumping over. And they seem to do nothing to fix that. Why are they all just hanging out wanting to sink the platform instead of peacing out?
Apparently what happened, I think the right at the start he says something like, he raises the fences, I think. Because I think I don't know how it's got. I think it's jumped. I don't know. It's gone
through.
They
yada yada it. They don't tell us.
Whatever.
Yeah, they don't say how it got out. It just got out. I like to imagine it just dug underneath.
Tunnel Bound, yes.
Sounds about right.
Shawshank its way out.
That's right. Picked up like a shovel and dug a hole.
Yeah. Poster of some sexy tune or something. I don't know.
And if their brains grew that? So large, where was the rest of the stuff that would be inside of their head? Are we just saying it was like a hollow space? It should have been like a Brainiac head because there was stuff in the head. So if the brain is 10 times the size, where's all the stuff that used to be in there?
It should have looked like Rocky Dennis is what you're saying at that point, right?
I'll tell you what it should have looked like. I don't know because my sister's watched this. It should have looked like Mojo Jojo from the Powerpuff.
Yeah, I was thinking.
That's exactly what I was thinking was Mojo Jojo.
Yeah.
The service.
I'm that one.
Hey, God, yeah. and I mean, we come with the infamous scene. We're jumping all over the place, but it's that kind of film. My fault. The sharks recognize a gun. Okay, fine.
Yes.
And then jump backwards.
They swim backwards, which they go to great lengths to explain that's physiologically impossible. That the shark, no matter how big your brain is, no matter how smart you are, you cannot now swim backwards.
Do you know what I've worked out? This film isn't about sharks. It's not about scientists. It's about the power of thought. If you can think it, you can do it. Clearly what's going on with this film.
The sharks are
Professor X.
I thought you were going to say it's about the friends we made along the way.
Yeah, but I like that the sharks have gotten smarter. The sharks have gotten smarter, so they can swim backwards. That's like saying if I read a lot of books, I could bend my knees backwards.
Yeah, or exactly. Fly.
Yeah, yeah. The music is Trevor Rabin. He did Con Air with Mancina. I think he also contributed to Speed with Mancina. On his own, he did the classic Jack Frost, 1998. He did Bad Boys 2. I still haven't seen the Bad Boys films. Armageddon, Enemy of the State, The Sick Day, which I love. You name it, he's done all sorts.
Now, wait a minute. Which Jack Frost did he do?
1998. The Michael Keaton one.
Oh, not the
Not the horror
Lifers.
One.
Not the horror one, no. Although his music would be suited to that.
It would be, absolutely.
Yeah. And then we cut, you know, so they've got the shark, they've put it to sleep, of course they have. Like, why do they have to keep it alive? Can't they just kill it and then get the stuff out? I'm not that I'm condoning killing sharks, but can't they, like, kill it and then get the fluid out? What are we doing here?
I like that they threw Carter Blake in there by himself to move an 8,000-pound shark.
Yeah, yeah, it'll be fine.
I'm still a little fuzzy on the whole science. Are they saying that Alzheimer's is because you're just getting dumb? Juice inside and now you wake up?
Because they keep saying it and it's not true, but I don't think it's true now. I think at the time they made the film, there was this thought that sharks didn't age, they didn't get like degenerative brain problems. It's not true. They don't get cancer, stuff like that. So the idea kind of was they have this spinal fluid thing where if we can extract that, we can rejuvenate like dead brain cells or damaged brain cells.
Right.
So essentially that's what they wanted to do to like, and they kind of make it simpler in terms of, we'll attack Alzheimer's. Is it dementia over or whatever? But that's what they're going for. And then they try and give her this sympathetic backstory of her granddad. And, you know, Alzheimer's dementia is dreadful, but doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, if you need more of this stuff, you've got this much money, the richest guy in the world, just buy more sharks. Why do you have to just buy, like, 1,200? Just get, like, 30 sharks and think, right, well, we get, like, a milligram from each.
Well, you
need a lot of Thomas Janes, but do it
How about not in the middle of the ocean?
I know.
How about with small sharks? Why does it have to be giant?
Why does it have to be mako sharks? Yeah.
Why does it have to be mako sharks?
Can't be those little lemon sharks or whatever.
Yeah.
I appreciate the fact that they took a melon baller and scooped out some Alzheimer brain from an Aurora bastard and squirted it with the shark juice. Oh, shit, it's coming back to life. That's good. Good science.
So then they just scrape it in the toilet and flush it away?
I know. I don't know. It's just bizarre. I mean, to be fair, though, we do get some really, really cool scenes. Like the arm bite scene's great, which is all practical. I think it was a stunt guy, because Stellan Skarsgård is such a cool guy. He basically was like, yeah, I don't really go in for all that. Doing your own stunts business really made me laugh. Like the practical effects, the music, the slow-mo, the really dramatic, like where he's crawling with one arm and like everyone's like, and then Carter goes to shoot it with a shotgun, which is like the most sensible thing. And then, you know, Susan, whatever her name is, lets it go by like hitting this big red, like, you know, do not push this button, and it just drops into the water.
It's convenient there's a shotgun in like the medical case, though. Is that just standard? Gauzes, forceps, shotgun.
Maybe it's a horse veterinarian, I don't know, because they carry shotguns, don't they?
I mean, I did think it was strange that they're going to shoot this very valuable thing for doing what sharks do just because y'all were negligent.
Well, yeah, it's the bit, you can see it's coming, can't you? Because they've all done it. They're all, like, stood around, like, patting each other on the back. He starts lighting up a cigarette.
Yeah, like, smoking
and
kills.
He smokes anywhere. He doesn't just piss where he wants. He smokes where he wants as well. And then you get this, they're all really, really happy. And, you know, you get all this foreshadowing of, like, she's sleeping like a baby. And you're like, she isn't.
No.
I like
that this movie wasn't set in, like, the 80s. It's 1999, and we still have a scientist just lighting up a cigarette in his undersea medical lab.
What?
Probably it stopped that.
Right.
Well, you'd think, wouldn't you? But yeah, as you said, Aaron. Yeah, they tend to smoke where they want. When I went to Italy, I was surprised that there are places you can't, but majority it's every like sat in a train station and people are you haven't been able
like
to do that here.
Cool like old school cigarettes. 20, I was like,
oh yeah.
I went to Paris to visit some friends. They're like, we just came back from
the French
Turkey. Let us roll our own cigarettes. I was like, what's happening?
In the non-smoking car.
What happened, though? Yeah. What happened, though? Like, people went from smoking, like, cigarettes. You know, we all know how they smell, even the nice ones. We all know how the expensive one. We all know how that smells. Who decided, right, I'm going to give up cigarettes and I'm going to go on a blueberry mango crush? Vape, like, where was that thought process? Like, you walk,
I don't even know what that is.
Like,
I smoked for years and years, and I'm like, I didn't like menthols, so now I want blueberry or I don't know.
But you're walking along, and all of a sudden, you just get hit by lemon zest, and you're like, what's this?
But now you don't even know. Are they smoking nicotine, or are they vaping nicotine, or is it blueberry pie?
But to be fair, I think the Stellan Skarsgård scientist scene is probably the best sequence in it. Like, it does some, to be fair, I think it does some really inventive stuff. Like, when he gets, it doesn't make sense, but who cares? Because it's like those helicopters, they have an emergency release in case what happens here, obviously not with the shark, but they all have an emergency release, like a cut. In case it gets entangled, like, so they would have just released it, and the helicopter would have just left him to get eaten in his, you know. He gets medevaced away, the shark, like, he falls down, again, negligence, Aaron. He ends up going into the ocean, but it's that bit later on, you know, the helicopter hits the tower, like, Janice, or Janet, whatever name is, she's killed, from the Sopranos, Tony Soprano, she's gonna be mad. And actually, I love, like, that whole part, like, then you get, they're looking, and why do they have these massive screens everywhere? Like, surely that's going to be a pressure problem. And they're all looking, like, Samuel L. Jackson's like, will somebody please tell me what that is? And, like, they all look up, and they're like, it's this shark, and he's obviously got oxygen, so he's still alive. And he gets shot against the screen, and it's like, you shouldn't enjoy it, but I enjoy it. You know what I'm telling?
I like that he's still alive while it's happening. The shark's using Stellan Skarsgård to break through the glass.
Hey,
he's still alive after he hits it, too. He's still around going, hey, what's up?
I'm pretty sure he'd be jammed at that point, I've got to be honest. I mean, maybe his brain powers made him stronger, I don't know. Anything goes in this film.
The whole helicopter thing reminded me of when I had little kids and we'd take them fishing off the pier with the drop lines where you just bounce it in the water, waiting for the fish to come up. It felt like they were fishing with a Skarsgård.
How strong are these sharks that they can drag a helicopter? Like, I mean, and we're meant to believe it's one of them?
Yes. Well, I love the fact that just spontaneously the winch breaks for absolutely no reason. No explanation. Just what? Negligence? Bad repair? I don't know what the story is.
I don't know.
Add that to the hurricane.
Oh, I love the noise, though. It's that kind of noise that's really, like, aesthetically pleasing. Like when, you know, like the wires <fire stand>, right?
Not a big one.
But yeah, to be fair though to them, the practical and model effects team did like an outstanding job. The helicopter, I think there was a bit of CGI in there for her, but like all that was the impact on the lab was all great. Brenda, that's her name. Sorry. And I do think, I know the CGI is not very good. Like it's really showing its age now, but I do think they get the balance pretty much spot on. Because I think if they made it now and they used the same amount of CGI to practical, people would be saying it was really good. Like a Glover remastered version of this, you know, like with new effects, that'd be really good. You know, just to kind of tighten up the Samuel L. Jackson bit, because that was a real jump scare, that bit. But it's kind of let down now because it's like, oh, look at that really strange like CGI man. It's all a bit odd.
I mean, it's not great, obviously, but I don't think it ruins the film, in my opinion.
Because there's still enough there in terms of like the practical effects.
Yeah,
it gets the balance right. It really does, but. Because the CGI, it's just that time, isn't it? I think, obviously, Jurassic Park, Terminator 2 were amazing, and they've kind of aged beautifully. Everything else between that time, like Your Lawnmower Man and films like that, I don't know. I'm just being honest. Do you know, like, I don't know what kind of CGI house or special effects house they were using, but it, no offence to whichever one they were, but they don't, they're just not the same quality. I think a lot of people were competing to do CGI at that point, and it kind of, some look really, really good, and others not so much.
Well, and this also that time where it's like, frankly, you'd watch an action movie, and entire action sequences would be CGI. You know what I mean? Like Die Another Day, the James Bond movie. It's like there's Pierce Brosnan, and it's all just green screen, him doing something.
Yeah, but I do think that, I mean, I just love, like, this is kind of at the back end of this era of filmmaking is about right. I mean, I went to the cinemas on Thursday. They put Braveheart in cinemas. Horrendous history, but what a film. Like, as an Englishman watching Braveheart, you kind of finish watching it and want to invade your own country. But it's absolutely, like, it's an outstanding piece of film. Like, I don't think there's any CGI in it at all. Genuinely, it's like, such a good film. And, like, that's 1995, and you're watching that going, oh, don't make them like this anymore. And I know why they don't. I gather why they don't, but it's just, it's a shame. I do think we'll balance out somewhat. But yeah, we meet LL Cool J as the preacher. He plays he's the cook, and he's joined by a very gutter mouthed parrot named Bird. Very imaginative.
That was him.
Yeah, just Bird. Come on, Bird. It's just LL Cool J walking around just like. But yeah,
it has to be very unsanitary to be the cook with a fucking bird dropping
just
bombs
all over
recipes.
The food. Right. Yeah, well, they're not potty trained; they just go.
To be fair, he should have had a kid. He should have had like you know, he should have had a cage or something like that nearby, because you got to be careful with birds. You've got to clean up the stuff. You got to be careful with the feathers. You've got to be careful
Absolutely.
With them. You've
They're gross.
You've got to look after them. You've got to keep them clean. Yeah,
they should have had a scene where Samuel L. Jackson eats a piece of the cake that he cooks early on and then starts pulling little red feathers out of his mouth.
A suspiciously small drumstick, like, what?
I beat
the North Carolina State Fair. I've seen what you guys think drumstick legs look like. They look like a human. Huge. This is the part where we find out.
LL should come out with, like, his smock with just, like, bird shit on his shoulder.
Yeah.
Because that's what it looks like when you have a fucking parrot. You walk around with shit down your back.
It's true. Just say it's baby sick.
It's true. Yeah, it's like baby sick, sure.
We find out at this point that the scientist, she's altered the shark's brain to create more of this, to make this special fluid in the shark's brain that they'll extract and use to... for medical purposes. That sounds even worse. And she's very much like, I didn't want this to happen. Someone says, how many sticks of dynamite would you have to set off in your ears before it clears your head? But yes. That's what you. He's had that prepared quite a while. I think he wrote that like the first weekend he worked with her. He was like, yeah, she's going to get me killed. And then I just love like the 90s, just the script, you know, with lines like, you know, you've knocked us to the bottom of the food chain. It's like, yes.
All the way to the bottom.
I know. I hated that line. I was like, we're going to go out on land and grass is going to eat us now.
Well, hey, M. Night Shyamalan did The Happening. It can happen.
Oh, my God.
That's true.
Oh, that's fail.
What? No.
Honestly, cheese and crackers. Honestly, I once said with that film, if anybody's listening to this and you're thinking about starting a film podcast, I don't know what the examples are for the podcast, but if you want to make a film podcast, maybe you've got friends, maybe, you know, it's like Kevin and Aaron and you're just two of you or a few of you. You're like Stu, you talk to everybody. The film to start off with, right? I'm the same Stu, I talk to everybody. The film to pick to see if it's got legs, as long as you know, because it's tough to do, pick The Happening. If you can't make an entertaining podcast out of that, it's not for you. It will be for you, but that is just perfect.
Yeah,
it's just such a good film to do. It's like,
I just remember being at the fucking theater and figuring it out like in 5 minutes. I'm like, oh fuck, it's nature. This sucks.
It's nature.
You don't want to know right away. And I was like, yeah, that was a deep M. Night slide at that point.
It was. He somewhat brought it back a little bit, but that was such a wasted opportunity. That film, like. There's some really ominous bits in it.
Yeah.
Even I draw the line at that. But as I said before, M. Night, not M. Night, LL Cool J is pretty much on his own for a good hour of the film. It's only when his bird gets eaten that he's like, right, I've had enough now. But the bird's a little, the bird's an asshole. Like, he never listens.
But it's still a bird. It's still a bird. It didn't deserve that. It deserves so much better. I was thinking about that too. I was like, does the bird make it to the end of the movie? Oh, there goes the bird. Shit.
There goes the bird.
It could fly. It could just fly at the top shelf. The shark doesn't
fly, for God's sakes. How does a shark sneak up on you, by the way? How does that happen? You're in a hallway. LL hides in an oven, and then the shark turns the oven on. they're really smart.
I love when he's like just talking to himself. He's like, Lord, like the irony of this is not lost on me. Like a chef getting killed in his own oven. And I thought, God, the script writing at times is really self-aware. Like it does do a lot of cliches, but it's really self-aware at times. You ate my bird. And he blows the shark up. And then later on in the film, you get one of the characters saying like, "Oh, I wouldn't get that close if I were you." Like, where was that advice earlier? About an hour ago. Really good then. Samuel L. Jackson. This is the point where he really rallies the troops. He's like, it took us a week to find out what this Alps incident was. It's basically 7 people survived this horrendous avalanche, and 5 made it out. And he's like, nature can be lethal, but it doesn't hold a candle to man.
Was
he's
the implication English, but... that they ate their friends?
Oh, like this the, is no, it. Like it's the a rugby live team? Situation. Yeah.
Well, you know, do you know what? I got more of the feel that it was more a cabin fever situation where people started turning on each other
and then eating each other.
I mean, I got the. Well,
I think we can agree there was possibly. Some cannibalism.
A dusting of cannibalism is all I'm asking for.
A dusting.
Samuel L. Jackson's definitely eating a person in this movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah. He sees the shark go around and eat somebody, and he just starts licking his lips like, yeah, I remember.
Yes.
Big fat seals, I remember.
that is the best shark scene. It comes about of this little. They're like right at the bottom. Where there's a portal where you can get out, held back by the water pressure. And, he's like, we're going to fix this. Like, we're going to fix it. And then it just comes up and kills him.
Right.
Yeah, we're I know. It's not going to do this anymore.
It's like in Independence Day, right? Whenever the president's about to say, this is our Independence Day, an alien just walks up and shoots him or something.
Just as all those extras are, like, saluting him with the American way. Like, this alien just, like, snaps his neck and goes, no peace. You know, just like
I mean, I saw this in the theater, and the initial reaction is surprise and then laughter.
Oh yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Watching Braveheart, because I think quite a few people must have been taken, because there was a lot. Like, I went with my dad, and there was a lot of people who were, like, in couples and like husbands, wives, and I presume girlfriends and stuff. And I reckon a lot of like the guys took their like girlfriend or wife along who hadn't seen the film before, because the bit where the wife gets killed, spoilers, people were like all the women went like, the screen was really good. It was a really small screening, so you could hear it was just like just the women. Yeah. It was so good. I was laughing my head off. And there's a scene where like, the scene where the King of England, because they're all just hamming it up like there's no tomorrow, the English.
Yes.
He's very much like Sophie Masso, the one from World Is Not Enough. She's basically given away this gold from the king to, she's a French princess, she's given this gold away to orphanages on the way back. And he's like, that's what happens when you send a woman. And there was this really big laugh, because I was like, oh, we haven't heard script writing like this in so long. It's just not accurate. It's not just...
When he tosses the son's lover out the window.
Oh, yeah. That's
not funny.
That's pretty. A few people were like, oh, like, didn't know what had happened there. That was, but it's really bloody, that film. Beheadings and
it is.
Oh, especially on a big screen, like, there's no hiding it. There's literally, right. It's like right there. Such
blood
a good film.
Splattering on the camera, literally.
Oh, yeah. Oh. And you're like, this is good stuff.
This is good stuff. And I always love when you're like, you've killed my wife. I want revenge. But first, I'm going to have sex with this other woman. If that's cool. Take that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, you know what? Hey, you speak French, opens a lot of doors for you. That's all I'm saying. That's not a euphemism. No. I'm just saying, opens a lot of doors if you speak French. The flooding staircase part, I really enjoyed that. You know, when they're climbing up, it's a bit like what they're doing Poseidon a few years later. You know, where it's flooding and the sharks are swimming round, and just basically it's a matter of time. And Jan gets eaten. They all, like, you know, the staircase breaks. Why does the staircase always break? They fall in. The actress was actually in an animatronic shark. That's all real. All, like, the only bit of CGI was, I think, a little bit in the background to put the shaft behind her or whatever. And yeah, I thought that was really, really good. But then you get this really weird scene afterwards where they try to get batteries for something. I can't remember what.
The flashlight.
He's like, Jan was a healthy girl. Something here has to run on batteries. Where would a girl keep her thing? And the cook's like, what's wrong with you? Like, who hurt you? that passed me by as a kid when I watched this. I was like, I don't remember this bit. Or I didn't remember. I didn't realise what they were talking about. Hey, dear me. Preach and Scoggs have this like little bromance. I don't know why, like where that comes from.
Out of nowhere.
Scoggs is like, will you zip me up? Like, is this the time for jokes? People dying all around you. Like, I know we're meant to be getting entertained, but you're meant to be traumatized later.
Right, at least 8 people have been killed at this point. Now we're making jokes?
Yeah. Good and time. The helicopter rescue team. Yeah, like, yes. This is not good. Of course, Susan, Saffron Burrow's character, is still obsessed with her research. She's like, yes, people have died, but If I don't go back and get this cassette tape or whatever it is she's got, floppy disk, it's floppy disk.
Floppy disk.
Yeah.
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 In 1999, yeah. Still using those, the picture of the save file.
All our stuff fits on a single disk.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got no redundancy, no backups. It's not like we've spent £1 million on this research. It's really crucial, but it's all on one disk. Don't you worry.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Three lines.
One line of code. It's like The Fly. Let me just type that in real quick. All right, now we've mastered teleportation.
She goes back to her cabin for her. Carter and Scoggs basically agree that they'll like do everything together. So this is the problem. I've done it again. My notes are getting really bad because I was enjoying the film too much. Really good fun. They do have. I tell you what
about where LL Cool J thinks he's gonna die, so he starts recording his legacy, and it's an omelet recipe.
Yeah. I wanted the recipe though.
I think it's like two lines into it.
Yeah. Don't add milk. No, come on. I got out of it.
Yeah.
Two eggs, no milk. Yep.
Oh, his name's Sherman Dudley. I was like, really? Okay. Yeah, but what I do like in this, because so then Skogs and Tartar decide to hold the breath, the old hold the breath gimmick.
For a long time.
Yeah, for like ages. They swim to like, I can't even remember what it's for. It's to help get them out, flood something, put air in something.
It was to drain the stairwell or something so they could go
out. Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
There's a lever for that. So that's good.
Yeah, of course there is. It's in the flooded section, as ever. But then Skogs gets killed, and his CGI leg keeps kicking. I always really like it. If anybody wants to look back, his CGI leg keeps like kicking as if, you know.
Like a lizard tail.
Yeah.
It's going to grow another Skogs.
It's going to grow another one comes out.
But they do have these like little beats after people get killed where they seem to have like a little bit of reflection on it. And I thought, that's unusual, because I don't think you see that much now. I mean, I'm not saying it's like Hamlet or anything like that, but but they do have these little beats where... Yeah, yeah. Exit followed by a shark type thing.
What's interesting, you say that, but at the end of the movie, when Saffron Burroughs bites the dust, there is not 1 second where they're like, shit.
Don't give a shit.
No.
No. They are. Oh,
they're just like us in the audience. They're like, well, that was well deserved.
She's not likable at all. I mean, really, half these people are not likable. LL Cool J is the only one where you're like, no, LL has to survive.
It's only because I want that bloody omelet recipe. That's literally it. That's literally it. Then we get this scene where, and it makes sense in the story, but it's very much like Susan. I don't know why, because she's wearing like wetsuit boots, which is the same material as what your wetsuit's made out of. Mm-hmm. She takes a wetsuit off to stand on it, but she's wearing the same material boots. I mean, we all know why it's done. Let's not kid ourselves.
Yeah,
we all know why it's
very
done.
Gratuitous.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's well, not she as bad as what the shark. She avoids the shark by standing on a coffee table at one point. Yeah. I
don't
think that's
going to
do it, honey.
I know. It works. It's not as bad as what they do in Star Trek Beyond, where that crew member just starts stripping off for no reason whatsoever, and Kirk turns out and she's like, look away. It's like, why is that there? Except for the trailers.
It was hot.
It was hot.
The bloody film wasn't. I would walk over your cold corpses and recover the ashes of my film. She electrocutes the shark. Very Jaws.
Which the shark wouldn't be flopping around. If you're being electrocuted, you're not like.
Maybe it's the size of the brain. I don't know.
The size of the brain. Absolutely. Well, it's also like, look, I get it. The neoprene of the wetsuit could be, not a conductor, but the opposite of a conductor. But it's still dipped in water. It's sopping wet, so the water will still conduct the ship. So,
right, because I think they're wearing wetsuits. I open watch them. The wetsuits. Wetsuits let water in and hold a bit of water next to your skin that then warms up slightly and keeps you warm. Dry suits, which they aren't wearing, I don't think, they keep the water out. So you're right, she would still get electrocuted. But don't worry about it. It doesn't. She might not
matter.
if the little booties she's got on have got a rubber sole. In which case, she doesn't need to strip off and put.
No, she doesn't.
You know, anyway, it's one of those films where, as me and Bill would often say, there's no point looking at the logic, you just get lost. You just get lost, you get angry.
Right, well, it's those wetsuits that the girls wear in movies that zip down in the front, for some reason, to show off cleavage.
In the back. It wouldn't have worked very well if, like, this shark smashing around and she's there, and trust me, we've all been there if you ever want to imagine, and she's just Saffron Burroughs is there going... Can't get them. Someone get the zip. Can't get the zip. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Wetsuits are not a flattering thing to wear. The research gets destroyed. She electrocutes, and because they even put it in like a little, it's like Ziploc bag, like a little Ziploc bag is to protect it from the water. I'm like, a Ziploc bag's water, like that waterproof? Like really? I think at this point there's basically Carter, Preacher, and Saffron Burroughs left alive. and the preacher gets bitten and carted off. And then he's got his crucifix, he's stabbing it in the eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of a sudden for this kill, the shark decides to savor his meal.
Just hold him for a little bit.
Yeah, everybody else the sharks immediately just obliterate, but for LL Cool J, he's just like, I'm going to taste him gently.
Yeah, I, God knows what's going on there. Taste him gently. oh, it's that bit where it's like, Carter's just stood there, flipping, preacher's getting chomped, albeit slowly, and it very, very slowly. Or at least
tabled.
It's like, what does a 12,000 pound Mako shark think about freedom? I'm like, what? I know I've been talking about Braveheart a lot, but the shark's gone all, you know, gone all William Wallace. I don't know what's going on there. and why does the shark and then Susan decides to sacrifice herself, do the noble thing, because the research is gone, she's got nothing to live for. It's apparently what they're thinking. Nothing to do with test audiences. And the shark, like, swims up to her at full pelt, stops, and then goes, like, and then eats her. And it's like, what what was that all about? Like, you know, just...
Maybe it just opened its mouth and she could have just jumped inside.
Preacher, I don't know, I think my notes got a bit mixed up here because I've got Bring Me Some Sushi, but that's from earlier.
Well, Thomas jumps in for no reason. I don't know what his plan is. And then LL, who again was just chomped, is left to fire the spear gun that he's never fired before in his life.
He's never fired. He's never fired the spear gun. And he wasn't there when they explained the plan to hook it up to the battery. So he doesn't know what they're doing.
Well, he's looking at it for a while. What do I do with this shit?
He's now making enchiladas in the kitchen.
It's like it's like unraveling and he's just staring, looking at it. I'm like, do something.
Yeah.
Do something. What are you doing? Don't look at it. And then it's like, they blow it up. And it looks so much like the like that scene from Jaws. I'm sure they did it on purpose to make it look shot for shot. And then he's like, oh, here comes the next shift. And you just see this like boat coming and all the people on top of it, like, yeah, all the
pills. We didn't mention whenever they get up and all this stuff outside is happening, like the hurricane's gone. It's a beautiful day outside.
Yeah,
the hurricane serves no purpose in this movie. If you wrote this movie without the hurricane happening, nothing changes. So why was there a hurricane?
I don't know. Well, it's just to make it look moody and ominous, isn't it? Like, but I don't know, because I kind of got the impression they were evacuating the staff, but it's not. It's just like, oh, it's the graveyard shift. I'm like, there's like 30 people getting on that boat. You don't drop from 30 people to, like, 4 people, which include 2 scientists. Like, surely you'd need, like, the technicians, the cleaners, like, whatever goes on for the week. Like, you know, no, but you need cleaners, especially in there. God, imagine the amount of mops you're going to need to sort of that mess. You know, it's like, what? I don't know. It's good fun. It's a good film. And then we get... they announced they're going to quit the jobs. And then we get LL Cool J.
And do what? Deepest, what are they
going to
do? Back to SeaWorld?
Yeah, possibly. Deepest, bluest, my hat is like a shark's fin. And this was, so you've waited long enough, everybody. This is what I was going to, this is the statement. I think, I can't wait to see what Stu thinks. And Kevin and Aaron, of course, but I've seen Stu's shot face pause. I'm seeing if I can top it or not. As far as pure cinematic entertainment goes, I say this with no sarcasm whatsoever. I mean this genuinely. This is damn near perfect.
is. Bold.
Damn near bold. Perfect.
It's in terms of near. like you know what you'd call
put that on the DVD cover. Damn near perfect, Sean from Review It Yourself. Hey, there's no way they had better quotes than that for this movie.
I don't know what quote they had. What do you guys think of the film? Kevin, what do you think? To start off with yourself, what do you think of the film?
Look, it's nonsense, but it's fun. It really is. It is a lot of fun. I mean, the performances, the plot. Of course we have to make these sharks smarter. What? I mean, I would definitely recommend it. I would say watch it. It's not Shakespeare, obviously, but I think it's very enjoyable.
At least there's no car chases. So, I mean, it has that going for it.
It does.
Oh, they could have had that, couldn't they? They could have put him like Carter driving it. He's trying to like shoot the shark before the car reaches the end of the pier or the end of the pontoon, wherever it is.
They were missing the trick there.
Yes. Something like that.
Well, John could always have somebody water skiing or some shit. I mean, why not, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The best one's that guy on, I think it's Jaws 1, where he's like, the kids are like traumatized and he's like paddling up to them in the little red boat with his paddle. Like, hey, you kids okay over there? They're all crying and everything. Like,
no, they're not. Then you okay. See his leg. And here's your leg.
You see his leg hit the boat. Yeah.
Not twitching, yeah. Though.
Not twitching.
No. Shame. So, yeah, I mean, the tagline for this film was, sorry, Stu, we'll come to you in a sec. The tagline for this was bigger, smarter, faster, meaner. And above it says, from the director of Cliffhanger and Die Hard 2. If those aren't seals of quality, I don't know what it is. Although I do love Die Hard 2. I'm just poking fun. I'm trying to see what the DVD cover. Yeah. Oh, that's German. That won't work. I'm trying to find out what quotes are on the back.
That is nicht gut.
Das ist Schockfilm.
Here we go. I've got it. So, the, how do I get it? Go. Oh, German again. Go away, German. Where's the English?
Schadenfreude. That's what it just says on there. Schadenfreude.
Scheiße. Where's the
das
German?
Ist guten.
So as I delve through every language known to man, Stu, what's your take on the film? Because it's the first time you've seen it, so what did you think? Live up to what you've heard?
You know what? I knew about the iconic Samuel L. Jackson death scene, and that is handled really well. Yeah, no, it's tough to not just know about a scene that iconic. So,
yeah.
So whenever he starts talking down there, I'm like, oh, this is the part where the shark's going to kill him. The acting is terrible in this. Like, Samuel L. Jackson and LL Cool J are fine, but Tom Jane and Saffron Burroughs, they're just bad. The effects are rough. It's like a borderline recommended best. I mean, it's enjoyable enough. It could probably stand to be a little shorter. For just like a popcorn, silly, like sharks are going to eat people, it doesn't need to be an hour and 45 minutes. You could cut 20 minutes out of this movie. Oh, nobody's crying.
Yeah.
It's a good podcast film, though. It's a good film to have a chat about. There's lots there to work with. There really is. But I found it. I found it, right? So the quote on the back of the DVD was from Susan Blachinska. Apologies if I've got that wrong. From USA Today. I think that's more Polish or somewhere out there. This is genuinely the quote from USA Today. I can't believe they put this on the DVD. Not even joking. I couldn't make this up. Adrenaline pumped shockwaves. That's what they went with. That's what they went with. Is that all you've got? Mine would have been better.
Damn near perfect.
It was only like 7 when this film came out, but I'd have given you a better one than that.
I don't know if in the UK they did this, but I think it was in the 90s when a movie wasn't doing well or you knew it was going to be stinky. Where they'd go up with a microphone to people just exiting the theater. You gotta go see this. It's amazing.
I have seen one that. You know, the only time that's ever happened to me, not with a microphone, but my friend's dad got, I don't know, I think through Air Miles or something strange, something he was a member of. He got like advanced tickets to a film. And my friend was like, do you want to come see this film? I didn't have a clue what I was going to see. And it turned out to be Bone Tomahawk. Now,
Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. So we walked out of it, and when you go to these, and it wasn't like a test screen, because I don't know who does those, but it was very much like an early release. It wasn't out yet. So there was like staff there from the cinema with like a little notepad and pen.
Right.
Literally, and they asked you questions as you walked out, like, what did you think of the film? And anyone who's seen the film will understand, and I won't spoil it, because there's some things you shouldn't spoil for people. You should let them enjoy it in their own good time. Now, if you're old enough, don't watch that if you're under the certificate of that film. They said, oh, what did you think of the film? My friend was like speechless. And I just said, it was an ordeal. That was an ordeal.
I feel like I was assaulted.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think we're never whole again after that one. But yeah. Yeah,
that... All right, let me give you my two cents. I've seen this twice this year. The first time was the first time I saw it. And I was actually entertained. I was like, it was better than I thought. But then I watched it again. And I immediately had to start watching TikTok. Because I was like, now that I know everything, it just didn't hold up.
Yeah.
It's tough to watch any movie twice in the span of a few months.
Yeah, but... Yeah.
No. No, I know exactly what you mean. Oh, God. Yeah, I'm going to go there. I haven't talked about it for a while. That's exactly how I felt watching the Batman for the second time. I was dragged to see it once. Thought it was okay. Thought it was all right. Too long. Too many endings. But overall, okay. My other friend wanted to go see it. And said, oh, you like films. You'll come and see it again, won't you? Yeah, all right then. Problem was, is because I'd seen it, I knew everything that was going to happen. Right. So it felt like twice as long. And there was no surprises, and it was like, oh, like it really fell down for me on that second view. So I know completely what you mean. And if you love that film, and spot on, it does add some genius bits. That's what rankles me, but I went through that. I've passed those times. But going, we're into our third year of Review Yourself now, so we're starting to get over it slowly. it's been an absolute blast. Kevin and Erin, would you like to tell the guys, whoever's listening, bless them, giving up their time, would you like to tell them where they can find you and what your podcast is all about? And then we'll come to you, Stu, after that. That's all right.
Absolutely. We're the podcast that wouldn't die. We discuss guilty pleasures and forgotten classics of the horror and sci-fi genre with a comedic twist. And we're all across social media. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere the finer podcasts are available. And YouTube.
Not SoundCloud, though.
That is true. Thank you.
Stu, where are you? I mean, obviously, but...
Everywhere. I'm everywhere. I'm omniscient. I'm omnipresent. You can't get away from me.
You're cute.
The podcast is the Stu World Order. We review random comic book movies. The website is swoproductions.com, where we have new articles every single weekday, a lot of movie reviews, food reviews, TV show reviews, and on all the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, wherever else you want to look, it is swoproductions.
Are you on YouTube, Stu?
Barely, but yes.
Cool.
It's anything I feel like streaming on Twitch, I then just put on YouTube. That's all I do with YouTube is just put things I've streamed.
To be fair, Stu, is there anyone I can say this to? It's you. You do enough. You do enough. You have nothing to prove. You do enough. So no, thanks to the guys for coming on. You're listening to Review Yourself, the podcast with the Psy. No politics, no pandering, absolutely no point. You can also now find us on YouTube, where we've been doing the odd live stream, a lot of Doctor Who content, going back and watching some of the classic stuff, as ever, tiptoeing or pussyfooting around the politics as much as I can, which is always good fun. We've done 270 odd episodes now. Been going just under 2.5 years, I think, or getting up 2.5 years. So, yeah, I can only say thank you very much for listening. Thank you very much to the guys for coming on. I must point this out. I don't believe I have to. Where I live or where I'm from, we use guys for everybody. Because I did have somebody say, why did you say guys when you're talking to a woman or women? Like, yeah, we use that for everybody, just in case there's any confusion.
I do too.
Hey
guys, let's go.
Yeah, everybody. It's easy, short, polite, done. I wish I could say it as ever this film. I mean, there's worse films out there.
Oh,
give it a go.
Oh, far worse.
Far worse than this.
Let's not go there. But yeah, thanks to everyone for listening, and thank you to the guys for coming on. Cheers, everyone.